Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast. This is the space and the place for leadership learning. I'm Joanne Smichael. I'm a speaker, an educator, a consultant, and a forever student of the world. Enjoy this episode. What is early onset Alzheimer's disease? It's a form of the disease that affects people before they turn 65. And I was shocked to find out that it can hit people as early as 30. Now, it's less common than late onset, but it's just as damaging. You know, the symptoms include memory loss, trouble with language, difficulty with judgment, changes in personality, shifts in mood. There's also difficulty with planning, decision-making, execution. And just like any other disease, early detection is critical. You know, the symptoms can't be dismissed. They can't. Of course, we know there is no cure yet. But there are treatments to manage the symptoms and improve the quality of life. Teresa Iyad has been allowing us a front row seat on her newly diagnosed journey with early onset Alzheimer's. Welcome back.
Thank you.
How you feeling?
Good. Today I feel good. I feel good most days, to be honest. Where I struggle is the end of the day. The best part of my day is the early day. So you're getting me at the best part of my day.
That's very good. I'm glad about that. Oh, my goodness. So we're living in, and you and I talked about this a little bit in our last conversation, but I do want to go deeper on it. Research. We're living in an era where research funding is being just slashed. Of course, there are organizations like American Brain Foundation, American Academy of Neurology, Alzheimer's Association, and they fund significant research. But there is no denying the fact that science funded by the government is essential to our wellness and our well-being long term, not just today. So with all that being said and me being on my soapbox, I want to talk about your connection to research.
Well, you know, we did talk a little bit about my participation in the study at NIH, and my unfortunately had to leave early. But my doctor, my current doctor, recommended that I consider joining studies at some of the bigger hospitals that are around infusion drugs, which would be. I'm not a scientist, and I'm never going to be able to say this exactly the way she said it. But as I understand it, infusion drugs get into the system a different way. They get into the brain a little bit better. And so she suggested that I consider those. I was like, I'm not considering them. I will do them. Just tell me where to sign up. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I'm 58. Whatever you tell me to do, I'm going to do. So the last time I saw her, you know, she said, what city do you want to go to? And she caught me off guard. And I said, I don't understand what you're asking me. And she said, for the study. And I said, oh, you got me in? And she said, no, I am recommending you. It's based on availability. So the city options were Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, and Baltimore, where there's current like UPenn and Georgetown and Hopkins. So Philadelphia's right up the road from me, but I know nothing about it. You know, it's 2 hours away from me. So right straight up the road, it would probably be the easiest. Georgetown turns out is closed. So Hopkins, I chose to...
The study at Georgetown is closed?
Yeah. They're not taking any new participants. Sorry. Okay. I should have been clearer about that. So I said, well, Baltimore's my town. I'm a Ravens fan. I'm an Orioles fan. That's where I went when we went out in college for our fancy nights out. We drove up to the city and I said, I love Baltimore. So we'll go. Let me apply to Hopkins. So I'm in the application process for Hopkins now. the trick is getting everybody to send the records that needs to be sent, right? Because you got records over here, you got your images over in this area of the system, you've got your doctor's notes, you've got, you know, all of these things that need to be pulled together and then sent to the hospital before the hospital's research center will accept you, review and accept you. So I'm in that process now with Hopkins, and we'll see, fingers crossed, that I'm accepted into the program.
You will be. We're going to pray and have faith and believe.
Thank you.
Yep. As you were saying that, what flashed in my mind was, if you don't have tenacity already in you, and if you don't have the capacity for self-advocacy in you, you better have somebody walking alongside you to get those records, to follow up, to follow through, to make sure that the records were received. Because if you're a solo traveler on this journey, it sounds like you are in a world of hurt.
Yeah, I can't imagine not having a support system around you. I mean, I obviously have my family, but my work has also been very supportive of time off and, you know, accommodations. And they have been asking me, hey, have you heard anything about your studies? I mean, you know, they're curious and interested because they care about me. Mm-hmm. And I'm lucky in that I do work for people who care about me. Not everybody is that lucky, right?
Right.
It's, again, I think studies are important. I think our government, our private foundations, whatever, I think we need to make sure that we continue medical research, scientific research. We have generations of people behind us. This isn't about us.
No, it's not.
I'm happy to be a guinea pig in a study if it means that my grandkids and my children or grandchildren or anybody would benefit from, if not a cure, then an intervention that would prolong lives. Why wouldn't we want to do that? I don't understand that. And it's mind-boggling to me, people who stand on these whatever soapboxes, principles, I don't even know what to call them, stand on these things so firmly, and then it will hit your family. Something will hit your family. Nobody, no family is bulletproof. And it doesn't mean it's Alzheimer's. It could mean it's cancer. It could mean it's, you know,
MS.
Thank you. And so we owe it to future generations to continue to want to know how to either treat or cure these things. We owe it to them. I want my kids to say, well, my mother had Alzheimer's and she died from it, but because she participated in this kind of research or whatever, it feels like she was helping.
Mm-hmm. Because she was helping. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the average life expectancy for somebody who's been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Now, early onset Alzheimer's is in some ways a different category because of how early it is. So when I look up research, because of course the first thing I did was go, how long does somebody with Alzheimer's disease live? Because we're all morbid that way. Don't anybody act like they're not. And I'm a planner by nature. So it's like, okay, if I have 10 years left, what do I want to do? Right? Uh-huh. So the average length of life after a diagnosis is between 10 and 12 years. Okay. So I'm 58.
Okay.
So do I live to be 68 or do I live to be 70? Or do I participate in a study that maybe helps me live till I'm 80 or longer? So all of those, it matters. People, it matters. Research matters.
Yeah. So as you think about, now you kind of have this idea in your head of life expectancy, though nobody knows. What do you want to do? Like, what do you want to do with your one and only precious life? Now you got this diagnosis. Now is like the, oh, Now, did I get to do this? Did
Oh,
I get
yeah.
to do that? So, what do you want to do?
My husband and I really love to travel. So I would like to see more of the world. We're going to Bermuda in a couple weeks, so that's exciting.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, I want to travel. I'd like to, I'm not going to work forever. At this level, with my short-term memory being impacted, me being able to work is just not going to be a thing. So if I can, I want to be helpful in the community. So volunteering. So my mother-in-law is 82. She moved down here to Delaware soon after we did a couple of years ago. She is an inspiration to me. She moved down here. She joined a senior center. She joined a Mahjong group. She joined this group that drives people who can't drive to their doctor's appointments. She takes Tai Chi. I mean, she's an inspiration in that she is living her best life in her 80s. Now, I would like to do that in my 50s and 60s if that is my window. So she is my inspiration for what I might do next. I think I am part of this. What is bringing up in me is I'm a writer by nature. I journal every day. When people need something written, they'll often come to me for ideas or to review. So I was thinking too about maybe reaching out to some publications and maybe chronicling my journey for them. And yeah, so we'll see. I mean, my house needs, all the rooms in my house need to be painted. So, I mean, there's lots of things that I can do when I'm not working, but I will need a period of mourning after I stop working, I think.
Oh, my Lord, of course, of course, of course. Now, what's going on with the idea about selling the house and seeing the world?
Well, yeah, that's we talk about it off and on. I think right now the world feels a little unstable.
Oh, just a
The
little.
world feels a little unstable. I think my husband clearly is concerned that we do things where I have access to the care that I need, especially if I'm going to be in a study. And I'm not saying it's off the table. I'm saying that what it is a dream. And whether
Okay.
we're able to accomplish that dream is all dependent. I'm not pinning my hopes on it. If all
Okay.
we do is travel and take trips and see the world, that would be that's just fine. As long as we can do it together, that's
Yeah,
fine.
I love that. I love that. So one of my friends, Karen, said to me, "You have to be able to dream a new dream. Like the dream that you had might not be able to come true. So dream a new dream. So, you'll dream new dreams." And I think that, and I'm obviously not in your position, but I think one of the upsides of this is you get to have clarity on your dreams. There's no more delay.
Yeah, clarity is a really good word right now because it's something I will lose. So as I make these decisions, as I put things in place, clarity in these moments where while I still can contribute and have it is very important. At some point, listen, somebody could find a cure tomorrow, and if that's the case, great. My husband,
Well,
he's such a
I've
loud
got allergies
sneezer.
today. He's sneezing. We're funny.
I tell you, he's the most dramatic sneezer. This is totally off topic, but he's the most dramatic sneezer. Anyway, at some point, I may end up losing clarity. So what I need to be clear on is right now. And right in, if not right now, then this month, this year. I can't, the big picture is getting smaller. So I have to fit things into the smaller picture, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. I want you to do lots of cruises. You know how I love
Yeah,
cruising, and
I know.
I want you to do that. It's a great way to sample the world. And I told you how much I love Heidi, and she'll do the hookup. But
We spoke to her about the Mediterranean, and we're hoping that we can make it happen next year. So,
that'll be wonderful. That'll be wonderful. I just have this feeling that because you've always been clear, you're going to keep clarity maybe longer than the typical early onset Alzheimer's patient. I just have that feeling.
From your lips to God's ears, that's all I can
Yes.
say.
Yes. I believe that. I believe that. You know, I want to wrap up about this, the clinical trials. A, I'm praying that you get into one. B, I think people need to know that they exist and that you can participate in clinical trials. And there's even a website. I don't know if it's clinicaltrials.gov or what it is, but there's ways to participate and to be a beacon for the future, a help for the future. To, I don't know, plant a seed. You sent a powerful message the last time we talked about this research and how important it is. It really is. And I think people who care about, especially about brain diseases, or any diseases, have to advocate for research funding. I think that people need to be micro philanthropists. Okay, you don't have $1 million to donate. Can you put out $100 a month, $50 a month, $10 a month? Because we all have the potential to be micro philanthropists, and whatever it is you care about, American Brain Foundation, Alzheimer's, Heart Association, anybody who's funding research that matters to you. Yeah. And you, like you said earlier, it's not for you, it's for your children and your grandchildren. Yeah.
We cannot fall behind.
No. But we don't even know. It could be for you because we don't know what these new infusion drugs are going to do, what these treatments are going to do. So it could very well be for you. How do we know?
I am hopeful. I don't, whatever this life has left for me, whatever it is, and I'm not saying that to be dramatic. I don't want to sound like I'm on stage in some like really sad play. My life is happy. I have a good life. I have a good family. I have good friends. I have people that care about me. That is half the battle, if not more. All of the other things add to that foundation. And I am grateful for my foundation, of all of the things, right? I'm not scared. There are a lot of people who face these things alone or without the support that I have. I'm not scared. I'm curious. And I just want to go into this eyes wide open so that I can plan, my husband can plan, my children can plan. Again, I'm a planner. Spent 20 years planning stuff. So, just so that if we don't have the answers, at least we might be aware that of if we can't answer what's next, we can be at least be aware of it.
Of
Does
what's
that make
next.
sense?
It does. Yeah. And you said something funny when we had lunch about your faith and your conversation with your friend, and you just had to tell her, Jesus is my dude and I'm good.
He I'm not a traditional churchgoer. I'm what most people probably call a C and E Christian. I go at Christmas and Easter, for the birth and the death, which is terrible, but or the birth and the resurrection rather. But I am a baptized person. I believe in the power of prayer. I believe that at some point in my life, I will ascend and I will sit at the right hand. I don't have to go to church to prove that to anybody. And the struggle I have with church, sorry, all church people, I love you, you do you. But the struggle I have with church is that a lot of times in congregations, people decide they know better.
Yeah, they know better, and the Bible might say it, but they know better. Yeah.
And I want people to just worship at how they, whatever fills their heart. And I'm a follower of Christ. I just don't do it in a church.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will forever remember Jesus is my dude.
He is my dude. He is my dude. yeah, he's my dude. And he will, you know, I think in the 70s, everybody had that. Everybody's grandparents or parents had that thing on the wall, footprints.
Oh, yes.
Where, you know, where yes. You walk in the sand and there's two sets of footprints. And then all of a sudden there's one set. And the poem says, you know, why did you forsake me, my Savior? And the Savior says, no, I didn't forsake you. I was carrying you. Yeah. I mean, everyone had that. Everybody my grandparents had it. My parents had it. So, but I remember that.
Yes.
And that is another foundation, is that when I can't carry, when I can't go on, I will be carried.
Yes, you will. I know that.
So, yeah. Yeah. Amen. Yeah. We're having church.
And the line from our church is, Jesus is my dude.
Jesus is my dude. If I started that church, the Jesus is my dude church, I would probably have a lot of lapsed Christians.
Come, yes. Front door.
Maybe that's my calling, the Jesus is my dude church.
Could be. We don't know.
We don't know. Oh. And then there are probably also people out there wringing their hands going, how could she talk like that? It's okay.
That's okay. That's okay. He gets it, and yeah, we get it. And that's all
I'm
that matters.
I'm perfectly fine with my relationship, so.
Yes. And do you think that that is part of the reason that you have peace with all of this?
I know.
Okay.
I know. Again, I think the people, if anybody listening out there knows me, and is like, I didn't even think she went to church. Yes, she doesn't go to church. That mm-hmm. doesn't define your faith. Mm-hmm. It doesn't define your belief. Mm-hmm. It doesn't define whether you deserve heaven or not. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. So, just, yeah. I'm going to take my faith and it's going to carry me, and I'm okay with it. Doesn't need to be a building with a steeple or a whatever. Don't need it.
Don't need it. Don't need it. Oh my goodness. You know, we're wrapping up, but I just really am grateful. I really am grateful.
You're going to make me cry. I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful that when I told you about my diagnosis, you immediately went right to, you're my friend, I love you, what are we going to do about this? Mm-hmm. You know, it was not, I don't know, I needed that in that moment. You know, I needed somebody to just say, you got this, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. It's too easy to do it the other way and sit on your sofa and give up. I'm not doing that.
No.
And I'm not saying to anybody out there who's experiencing those feelings right now, experience them, move through them, but know that you can act, you can be productive, you can do all the things. It'll just change, you know, the level you do them will change, but you can do them.
Yeah.
Keep going.
And you are evidence of that. I have such respect for you. I have such love for you.
I love you right back.
Such love for you. So thank you. Thank
you. You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening. Be sure that you subscribe and share. You can get more leadership learning from my YouTube channel and by following me on Instagram. Reach out when you're looking for a speaker to energize your next event. Reach out when you need curated leadership learning for your organization. Reach out when you're ready for consulting that will help your organization fulfill its potential. I'm Joanne Smichael, and thank you for tuning in.